So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
I only really kind of skipped through the main event, so I don't know much about the details. I just know the finish.
It was a long main event.
It was like half an hour, man.
Yeah.
My countrymen and my friends, I had hoped against hope that some miracle would prevent a devastating war and bring to an end the invasion.
This most serious threat World Wrestling Federation has ever known.
The long-term future of sports entertainment could change forever.
A succession of actual wars have shaken the entire world and have threatened to bring on the gigantic conflict, which is today, unhappily, a fact. Many times that I have seen war and that I hate war.
This is our last chance.
There's no going back. There is no tomorrow. They want to finish us off.
Feel this moment for the rest of your life.
This war is only half over, and it could damn well be lost.
We're laying it all on the line.
Nothing can stop the WCW and ECW.
Austin is going to lead us into invasion.
Lift up your heart. All will come right.
We will kick WCW and ECW's.
No WWF superstar is going to deny us from our destiny.
Death! The sports entertainment!
I have seen war.
WCW!
And I hate war.
Great time! Over.
Welcome to another edition of Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, the invasion continues today as we move on to the invasion pay-per-view, which in hindsight may have been the high point of this entire angle based on the success this show had.
Yeah, okay, sure. As a show itself, yeah, it was okay. I think the didn't live up to the hype whatsoever. When we first saw that poster with the Shane and Vince's
It was
face,
a fantastic poster.
Oh, great poster.
With their faces merged in together. Of course, it made little sense by the time this pay-per-view occurred where you would have had to fit four faces into that with Stephanie and Paul Heyman. Maybe if you could have put their two heads together, had boobs underneath, and the baseball hat on top.
And giant bald
That would have
skullet.
Been with a ponytail, yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been the accurate invasion poster. I am sending the challenge out there for someone to design this poster. And if you do it and I laugh, I will send you something. Someone will do it, I hope. Daniel Bauer, Brian Hillhouse, Shay.
Yeah.
Shy.
I also put out the challenge out there for any type of invasion-like poster featuring melding of any faces that you deem appropriate.
Yeah, maybe that'll be, taking a page out of Conan O'Brien. Maybe put some faces together from The Invasion.
Because the Invasion-style poster.
As much as I love some of the pictures we've got on our Facebook group, I think some of them not original work.
Plenty of them not original work, as we somebody called out on the Law Facebook group this past week.
Yes.
When Daniel Power went on a
rampage. He posted like 200 photos Sunday night. Just insane. Which, you know, that's great that you've added them, but I'm going to give the extra nod to those that actually go out, such as Shy, who created that one of us going into a mine with Moppy and Shane McMahon. So that is the challenge that we are setting out for our followers. And Wei, we had a big jump this week up to 786 members of our Review Away Facebook group.
786, a complete seven members up from last week.
That is a big jump for us, as we've learned in these latter months that we had that gigantic March period heading into WrestleMania, where we kind of flushed out all of our new members into 1 month, and now we're it's much like the WWE traditionally, where after WrestleMania, it's a slow period for business.
We'll just have to spend the whole year to build up.
So who do you have more faith in, everyone? The WWE creating new stars or Review Away creating new Facebook members? So we're trying. We're doing what many would do. We bribe people with prizes and contests and gimmicks to try and get people over.
But viewer's choice. Viewer's choice next week.
Yes. We should do that 1 week. A viewer's choice edition of Review Away.
Well, the whole thing really is kind of a viewer's choice. Like, we take requests all the time, but yeah. I don't know how you...
We don't always take
them. We should have a poll, actually. That's what we should do.
Yeah. How long should we put off reviewing the 94 King of the Ring? I say a year. But anyway, let's get into it. The WWF WCW Invasion pay-per-view taking place from Cleveland, Ohio, which was ironically in the same arena as noted throughout this pay-per-view as the Raw from March 26th, where it was announced that Shane had bought WCW.
Oh, how ironic.
Oh, so ironic. Cleveland, Ohio, folks. That beautiful city that we've talked about in the past on this show.
Is that true? That would have been 3 months. 3 months apart, they went to the same city twice, huh?
4 months. March to July.
Oh, this is July.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here we go. They open up the show. I thought a very good opening video with the likes of Winston Churchill, George Patton, spliced in with the WWF versus WCW footage to set up the invasion theme. This was very, very...
Stalin.
A lot of hyperbole.
Hitler. Weren't they in that?
They might have been. Yes.
It's the same thing.
So it was the invasion theme. Big difference between Stalin and Hitler compared to Winston Churchill
and
George
Patton.
Well,
same thing as Shane McMahon and
That was the inference there, was that Shane was Hitler and that maybe Heyman was Stalin.
Yeah.
I had a lame joke I was going to make.
Let's hear it.
Especially in the main event, I would say Kane was Stalin in the main event. Because he could barely... Did you count how long he was in the ring for in that 30-minute main event? I don't think he was tagged in once. We'll talk about that later. I told you it was a lame joke, and you wanted to hear it.
Fuck.
All right, we have Jim Ross and Michael Cole on commentary. I was not a fan of this. I knew Jim Ross was not a fan of this combo, and I'm sure deep down Michael Cole was not either. Two play-by-play guys, just not conducive.
Yeah. Well, who else would they have chosen at the time?
Yeah, because Jerry Lawler had quit the company at this point. Heyman was involved in the angle, though I don't see why you couldn't have put Heyman. Left him on commentary and had a representative from each side. Wouldn't that have made sense? You had back-and-forth referees throughout the night.
It would have, actually. Entrances. Especially considering Heyman is the heel. He would have played that role fine.
They definitely weren't bringing back Arn Anderson for another night on color. So we kick off the Invasion pay-per-view with Lance Storm and Mike Awesome, who are already in the ringway. Not enough time on a 3-hour pay-per-view to give them entrances. Fantastic. Storm starts to cut a promo, and he says he's going to list the reasons for this match being historic, and he's cut off by Edge and Christian's theme music, who come down. They note that Awesome is the hardcore champion, which, as we noted a few weeks ago, he was scheduled to defend on this show, but those plans were changed, and he's now in a tag match.
He doesn't even have the title.
But he was the champion.
He was. Yeah.
Didn't come out with the title.
No. No. He was not the champion here. Jeff Hardy was the champion.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He had the title. Oh, that hardcore title. It was hard to hold on to there time period.
Yeah, I looked up the title history of that, and like, every show it would change at least literally 5 times per show.
I think they joked near the end. It was like Just Incredible was like a 56-time hardcore champion. Because they changed it at all the house shows as well, multiple times. I hated that title so much.
And it was like this flimsy piece of leather. Like by the time that they kept it till at this point, all the plates had fallen off of it, and it was just a piece of rubbery shit.
I always took that as a subtle jab because it was after Brett had left the company that they moved the title to Austin at that WrestleMania, gave him the new title, and then they brought back that title, which I always associated as the Brett World title, and it was all smashed up, and they had barbed wire and shit on it.
Yeah.
I always thought that was a little jab at him.
Well, I mean, it was also Michaels' title. It was also Yokozuna's title.
Maybe it was a jab.
Hogan's
at all
title.
Hogan's
Ultimate Warrior.
Hogan was gone at that time. Maybe it was just Vince getting his anger out at all those guys that had left.
Conspiracy.
Anyway, Lance Storm and Mike Awesome against Edge and Christian. This was the first case of a number of guys on this show who just by default became babyfaces, such as Edge and Christian. Edge was already on his way to a babyface turn, but Christian was still a heel at this point. Early on in the match, they worked over Christian, who he took a dive early on, looked like he had almost killed himself. Mm-hmm. Early on in the match, we saw a big splash by Awesome onto Christian off the top, but Edge broke up the count. Mike Awesome teased a top rope powerbomb, which to me was a babyface spot, but Christian countered it. They built to a hot tag for Edge as Storm is tagged in by Awesome. They have a near fall with Christian turning Edge over in a small package position, but Storm kicks out. Storm then leapfrogs Edge, who spears Awesome for a near fall. Edge kicks out of a super kick when Awesome covers Edge, and then the finish comes as Awesome is setting up a running powerbomb. And then Christian spears Awesome, and Edge gets the pin for a win. So you keep that kind of a dissension with Edge and Christian, with Edge stealing the win.
And Michael Cole, how ironic that Christian used his brother Edge's move, the spear, for the victory.
Not ironic, as I wrote on my notes. So yes, awkward looking finish, I thought, because it looked like Edge nearly landed on the face of Awesome during that finish spot where he took the powerbomb, and Edge just like landed on Awesome's face. We go backstage to one of 105 vignettes with Vince McMahon, who yells, "Yes! ENC reek of awesomeness!" And he starts doing the fingers in pose that Edge and Christian did. Regal walks in, and he announces that Austin has arrived tonight. McMahon compares Regal to George Washington and what he has to do to Raven tonight. So it was Vince giving pep talks to pretty much the entire WWF roster throughout the night.
And impersonating their catchphrases.
Yeah, making them all look really, really lame, I thought. Yeah. Up next, Way. I was not prepared for this match.
Me neither.
In.
I didn't know this even existed.
Oh, I knew this match happened. I just didn't know why they would put this second match in. The Battle of the Referees, everyone. Nick Patrick representing WCW taking on Earl Hebner with Mick Foley as the guest referee. And they actually put together a video, Way, of what led to this historic referees match. And Earl Hebner's acting throughout this was awesome. This all began with all the referees in a locker room together and Hebner saying,
"Hey, I'm telling you for this last time, keep your crappy shirts on your own side.
Yeah, we'll put our stuff anywhere we want.
You won't put your stuff around here anywhere, pal. Who's going to stop this?
We're going to stop
Hebner was just atrocious. Jim Ross informs us that Foley just showed up at the end of Sunday Night Heat, so they didn't even promote Mick Foley being part of this pay-per-view. Just showed up, and he's a guest referee on two of the matches. Patrick comes out with his fellow WCW referees, and Earl Hebner gets a shockingly loud pop, and there was even a sign that read, "Go Earl."
A feud over shirts.
Yes. You keep your crappy shirts on the other side. Some real shitty kicks by Earl Hebner.
Oh, so bad.
It was just horrible. Like, I understand some people are really green, but you would think that Hebner, being around the business as long as he had, being involved in as many matches, might have an inkling of how to work, how to throw a work kick. Not a chance. No. He was atrocious.
This was just as bad as some of the women's matches from TNA.
Oh, this was, yeah. This was like some of the bad TNA matches or some of the shitty Raw match, as we see now. Foley was by far the only person anyone cared about in this match. Yeah. The WCW officials are on the outside, and they attack Hebner on the floor, and it leads to a brawl spot with all of the referees.
Yeah, what's funny about that is that among the WCW referees is Brian Hebner, who was cheering against his own dad.
Yeah, that made... I didn't know for sure if that was Brian Hebner, and it was. Foley bans the referees from ringside, which is kind of funny. And then Earl Hebner hit what had to have been the shittiest looking spear for the win. A clap of the hands to the agents who booked the exact same finish two matches.
It wasn't exactly a spear, more of a running collision.
It was like, picture Earl Hebner running, and at the last second someone stuck their foot out and tripped him, and he went into a guy and took him down.
Yeah.
That's what this looked like.
Or maybe Earl Hebner's running in across a hallway, and then at the intersection somebody else walks, and then he runs into that person at the intersection of the hallway. That was the finish of the match.
Jim Ross put the exclamation on this match, stating that it was bowling shoe ugly. And then we got Nick Patrick playing heel to Mick Foley, and then Foley took out Socko and put on the claw onto Nick Patrick, so Patrick was left in the ring. But don't worry, he'd be back later tonight. Then, I don't know what version you had. I had the actual pay-per-view tape from when it aired on pay-per-view, so it had all the spots and stuff during it, and we get a preview for Tough Enough coming up this week and what to expect. And the gang goes to a strip club, and we have clips from Maven and Chris Nowinski about going to the strip club and Maven dressing up as a woman in drag.
I do not remember
Future
that.
Star there. Future star. Yeah. Not exactly Wade Barrett, who won NXT on Tuesday night. Then we go to SmackDown from last Thursday, and they did an angle where DDP put Deborah into a trunk and drove off in the car.
She was pissed off about that.
She was about as pissed as I was during this next segment because someone had the bright idea, let's put the wives together. The wife of The Undertaker and the wife of Austin backstage having coffee, and they're going to act. Sarah called DDP a pervert and a psycho and says that Mark will take care of him. This was so bad that I'm going to play it for everybody.
Ow, damn it!
Are you okay? I don't think I'm okay. I mean, consider last Thursday night, Diamond Dallas Page locks me in the trunk of that car, drives me around the arena, and then just leaves me on the corner. I guess I'm okay if you think about it.
You know, nobody knows Paige better than I do. And you want to know something? Not only is he a pervert, he's psycho, too.
I just know one thing. I can't wait for Steve to tear him from limb to limb tonight. I can't wait.
I'd like to do that myself. But after Mark gets through with him tonight, there's going to be nothing left Diamond Dallas Paige.
I hope you're so right.
Sarah is horrible. Just atrocious. But Deborah is 100 times worse. Deborah's just terrible.
Yeah.
This woman was hired to look good and never talk. Ever, ever, ever talk.
Yeah. Why was she hired at all in the first place? She doesn't look that great.
Well, that was during the whole war where they were able to grab someone from WCW and they threw her in, and then she married the biggest star in the company. And that was her keys to the VIP, so to speak.
They talk about their husbands beating up DDP, and they would later both divorce their husbands.
That's true. That's true. Both ex-wives now. I wonder what Sarah's up to nowadays, now that she's a... I had another joke, but I couldn't fill it through. I was going to be like... No, I can't even piece it together. Well, I was going to try and make a joke about his tattoo. Remember he had the Sarah tattoo at the time?
Yeah.
Up next, we've got the APA, who are the WWF Tag Team Champions, taking on the WCW Tag Team Champions, Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo, in a non-title match. And Jim Ross even brought up the fact that O'Hare and Palumbo defeated Kevin Nash and somebody else for the tag titles. I missed whoever the other guy was.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But DDP.
Was that who they defeated for them? O'Hare's gimmick, according to all the videos they show of him, is that he attacks guys and then he takes his shirt off. He did that every time. He attacked someone, then took his shirt off and posed, yelling uncontrollably.
I love that gimmick. It always works.
Yeah, it did wonders for him. They showed this during his debut, and then he did the same thing on the stage at WWF New York, where they attacked the APA and he tore his shirt off. Then Michael Cole notes the irony of the Gund Arena tonight, which we've already been over, and Ross counters and says, yes, it's a strange occurrence. Well done, Jim Ross. It was interesting watching this match, Way, because of the five people in the ring, the only one that still has a job in the company is Teddy Long, who was the referee for this match. The commentary states that WWE is clearly number one, but is being challenged tonight. And then Jim Ross, right after making that strange occurrence reference, states, ironically enough, Teddy Long has worked for the WCW and WWF promotions. Palumbo, bad-looking super kick to Farouk, and this leads to a clothesline from hell by Bradshaw for the win. And if you're keeping score, the WWE is up 3-0 on this pay-per-view.
And didn't Shane McMahon say Scotty Too Hotty won his match or lost? No, he lost his match.
Yes, on Heat. That's right. Chavo Guerrero on Sunday Night Heat was the lone victory for WCW and ECW.
3 wins in a row for the WWF.
Yeah, good start. Backstage, Vince McMahon is with Chris Jericho. Jericho says that WCW never had a leader and was and then starts to run down Paul Heyman with basically calling him fat and also refers to him as the White Shrek.
Was Shrek out at the time?
It came out in the summer of 2001, so that is a reference that was applicable then and is now, because the latest Shrek movie, I believe, just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Shrek Forever After.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's in 3D.
Ooh. We then go to Billy Kidman, Stephanie McMahon, and Shane McMahon in their locker room. Stephanie McMahon is professing her hatred for Chris Jericho. And then Heyman, who is also there, starts giving a speech and puts all the pressure on Billy Kidman that he has to win this match. They're getting their asses trounced on this show.
Yeah.
So it's all up to Billy Kidman.
Kidman, we reviewed a WCW pay-per-view not long ago. One of the it was the final Nitro. And Kidman, amongst him and Rey Mysterio and Three Count, he was probably the most over cruiserweight that they had.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Now he's here. They took the wife beater and jeans away from him. He looks like the most generic.
Very
wrestler.
Generic in wrestling tights and, I mean,
not the best promo either.
No, he was one of those guys. He got over in WCW because of his
Ring work.
Yeah, his ring work, yeah. And he had just a connection, much like the Hardys, who were never great on the stick, but they connected with their audience. And Gidden was the same, and, man, his charisma was zapped when he came into the WWE. So this one was weird, because X-Pac, who everyone just hated this guy, and not in a good way, he was suddenly a babyface.
Forgot
where,
the music.
Oh, I forgot, everyone.
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
X-Pac comes down to the ring wearing a WWF t-shirt. And all of a sudden, he is supposed to be a babyface in this match against Billy Kidman. Fans still hate X-Pac. Then Cole states it's ironic that Billy Kidman won the WCW Cruiserweight title on an edition of WWF SmackDown. That's not even a coincidence. That's just a fact. He won it on a WWF show. It's not ironic at all.
JR explains that X-Pac was fired via FedEx from WCW while he was injured.
So he has a beef with this company, and he's going to take it out on Billy Kidman.
Another ironic point.
Yes. I'm surprised that Cole didn't bring up the irony of Kidman's last name. I'm on today, aren't I?
Fuck. Damn, man.
X-Pac attempts a somersault off the top rope, but misses. And all of a sudden, X-Pac just starts working as a heel anyway. This was a horrible dynamic I found. And these guys were working well in the ring, but I really hated the dichotomy, so to speak, in this.
Go ahead.
Kidman dove into an X-Factor off the top for a two count. And then X-Pac gets crotched, attempting a Bronco Buster and the Shooting Star Press by Billy Kidman for the victory.
Yeah. Cole said one of X-Pac's motivations in this match was to prove to his former friend, Justin Credible, that he made a mistake by leaving his stable to join ECW.
Well, I think Justin Credible didn't need to really get that message in this match, because he probably got that message because of the fact he was sitting at home probably watching this pay-per-view. He wasn't even on this card.
My point is, what did the X-Factor ever accomplish? They didn't do anything to elevate either Justin Credible or Albert in any way.
They elevated Uncle Cracker.
Yes, probably out of everything. But it just felt like Sean Waltman going to the back and saying, I have an idea for a stable. Let's call it after my finishing move, and we'll get two random guys.
Biggest pop of the night thus far was Billy Kidman winning with the Shooting Star Press. In this match, they effectively turned Kidman into a babyface.
I think I do honestly think they were expecting that reaction, because this was X-Pac, you know? If it was anybody else that
I don't know. They
fighting,
put the WWF shirt on him.
On X-Pac?
Yeah, he came out wearing a WWF t-shirt. Mm. That seems like a concerted effort by them to
But even, it could have been just the midway through the match, but X-Pac's moveset throughout this whole thing, you know, with the...
That spinning heel
the
kick.
The sleeper holds.
Yeah.
Definitely used to elicit boos, and every time he would just raise his hands, that was...
I don't know whatever happened to Sean Waltman, because he was a very good talent, and that X-Pac gimmick, I think it was just... It had its shelf life, and he never evolved out of it. He was always a good worker. I'm never going to knock the guy in the ring.
He just has a terrible, terrible look, and he just thinks he's cool. Like, he really thinks he's cool. But he's a fool.
Backstage, Diamond Dallas Page is with Shane, Stephanie, and Heyman, and DDP starts getting lectured about focusing on tonight and not about last Thursday on SmackDown, where he was so proud that he drove off in a limo with Deborah in the trunk, and according to Deborah, DDP just pulled over at the side of the road and left her there. What a dick. Then we go to Tori Wilson and Stacy Keibler, who start talking about their boobs and legs and say that they'll give a private showing to the Hardys later tonight.
How embarrassing to be members of Tori's and Stacy's families watching at home. They're probably like, my daughter's going to be on WWF TV for the very first time. Let's gather all our relatives, all our nieces and nephews together, and let's watch.
And Tori grabs her boobs.
And Stacy starts bragging about her ass.
You ready, Tori?
Stace, I was born ready. You know what? It's just too bad the audience is going to have to settle to see Trish Stratus in her bra tonight. They're going to be missing out on these big, voluptuous breasts. Your breasts and my ass.
Stacy, she says, Tori says, Stacy, you do have a firm ass.
I know. Up next, William Regal against Raven. And this was the first time actually I noticed the separate entrances, which was a little added touch I enjoyed about this pay-per-view. They each came out from separate sides.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that.
Took me a few matches to notice. This match, pretty dead crowd for this match. I mean, no one was really into these two too much. A lot of suplexes by Regal. They weren't given a ton of time. And then we actually got a run-in. This was the match that necessitated a fucking run-in. The referee was distracted. Taz ran in, delivered a T-bone suplex to Regal, and Raven hit the Raven effect for the win. Weak finish. This match didn't do much for me. Regal either clicks or he doesn't click. And typically when he's booked in short matches, it doesn't click.
The problem is with Regal, his technical style is so different from what his character is.
You guys can work with him. I mean,
No. Like, the style's a great style, but it's just so different from what his character is. His character is this comedic commissioner with a British accent. And nowhere in his backstage character do you get the sense that this guy is some technical wizard like he wrestles in the ring. And Raven... I mean, can you even recall one Raven promo from his WWF run?
No. I think his WWE run was a giant fail.
That was his best trait, arguably, and at least in this angle, he was not given one chance to talk. And the run-in was just completely uncreative. It was just Taz running in there, delivering a suplex, and leaving without even... terrible.
The Undertaker, Kane, and Sarah are in their locker room. Vince McMahon walks in. And Vince says that they've lost two in a row now, and they can't afford to lose another. And I'm looking at the number of matches, and yeah, they can't afford to drop another match. It's, I believe, 3-3 at this point.
Is it?
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Up next, we've got, representing WCW, it's six-man tag team action, Sean Stasiak, Chris Kanyon, and Hugh Morris taking on the team of Big Show, Billy Gunn, and...
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate it, X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
Albert, the Intercontinental Champion, if I'm not mistaken at this point. The Big Show... is wearing a t-shirt that says Big Show with an arrow pointing to his dick.
Mm-hmm.
Surprising this didn't get over, this shirt.
It was weird how they used Sean Stasiak's Mr. Perfect ripoff music from WCW.
I couldn't believe what...
A ripoff of a character that they created themselves.
And now he is on the WWF programming here.
And it was just strange how amongst the three, Sean Stasiak, Kanyon, and Hugh Morris, they decided to push... Sean Stasiak, the guy that they fired themselves.
Yeah, Jim Ross even brings this up in the commentary that he was blackballed at one point by the WWF, which, if for those of you that recall, in the fall of 1999, I don't know the full story, and I've actually interviewed Stasiak and talked to him about this, where he talks about he was going around and he was recording, I guess, his life on the road or whatever, and all of a sudden some guys found out he was recording stuff, and he was fired, and apparently Jim Ross just tore him apart in the locker room in front of everybody.
Hmm.
So WCW grabbed him. But Sean Stasiak definitely on the up and up here, because not only did he have a pay-per-view match here on a WWF event, also receiving the Scott Putski Award. So congratulations. Nick Patrick is back here as the referee. I sense a conflict of interest here. Here's a guy who has a deep interest here in the outcome, has already been laid out by Mick Foley and lost to Earl fucking Hebner. And now you have to call a match down the middle. Biggest pop of this entire matchway was something that happened in the crowd, because everyone turned their head. The camera never went to it. So I'm imagining someone did something in the crowd and it took all the interest out of this.
Second biggest pop was for Sean Stasiak. Chance of meat.
Fabulous gimmick. Billy Gunn hits the Famouser to Hugh Morris, and this looked horrible. A horrible, horrible execution of the move. Stasiak then hits a reverse DDT onto Billy Gunn, and Morris is put on top of Billy Gunn. However, his shoulders were also on the canvas. Not a good finish to this. And after the match, Big Show just destroyed everyone in WCW and then gave the alley-oop to Chris Kanyon. The alley-oop.
He even calls for it. Like, I think he worked really hard to try to get this move over, but for some reason, it just didn't work.
Surprising.
The alley-oop.
And it was like,
it involved him putting his opponent's crotch on his face.
And then basically throwing him around. But to me, an alley-oop, wouldn't that be a two-on-one move? Like, an alley-oop is, yeah, you feed the ball to a guy who, yeah, dunks it into the
net.
Like a
3D.
Yeah, like, this is, that would make more sense to call, how is this an alley-oop?
An alley-oop is just,
why don't you call this, like, the slam dunk, or the reverse, or, fuck, man, call it a hook shot for all I care, but the alley-oop?
It's just a stupid name.
Thank God that didn't catch on. Booker T is backstage with Shane McMahon. And this is where Shane brings up that Chavo Guerrero defeated Scotty Too Hotty on Sunday Night Heat. So WCW is up 4-3. This coming after the match that Vince said, we can't afford to lose another match. They just lost another match. And they start yelling at each other back and forth, like getting all jacked up for their inaugural brawl match. And this was just, I never liked Shane McMahon when he talked. And then we get William Regal and Tajiri in his office, and Regal with an impassioned promo motivating Tajiri to go out there and show his loyalty to the WWF. And that leads us to Taz versus Tajiri, with the gimmick that Tajiri is the ECW alumni who is chosen to be with the WWF. And we get Tajiri's crazy punch-kick combo. Taz, at one point, got the back of Tajiri and even put his hooks in, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. Taz later attempted an armbar but could not straighten it out. We see a springboard elbow off the ropes by Tajiri, tarantula spot by Tajiri, and then the mist and the Gabriel Gonzaga kick by Tajiri for the victory. This match was fine.
Yeah.
The 4 minutes it was given. Taz got a little suplex in, and Tajiri with the mist.
Taz's outfit just reminded me of a janitor. Just looked like the janitor.
Wow. He was getting a little big at this point. Had to cover him up. Wasn't going to be wearing that fabulous moolah singlet anymore. We then get a promo for the WWF Hardcore VHS that's airing this month on WWE Fanatics. And the majority of the clips were unprotected shots to the head to promote this Hardcore DVD. Then Matt Hardy is backstage with Jeff, giving him a pep talk and asking, why am I not on this pay-per-view? And RVD answers that question by laying him out with a chair and making him look like a complete jobber. And Jeff just yells, damn it! And from their way, we go to my favorite entire segment on this entire show. We go to WWF New York. Hardcore Holly is signing autographs. And this was the most contrived autograph session you've ever scripted. Some fan in a WCW t-shirt walks up to Hardcore Holly waiting for an autograph. Hardcore Holly gets up, starts yelling at this fan, tears off his shirt, and then yells and calls him, "You bastard!" Just beat the shit out of this little Mark fan. This was awesome. I don't care how fake this looked and how deer in the headlights this fan looked. I love this segment. It's awesome.
Could you imagine if that were to happen?
So lame.
Like a...
tore his shirt off.
Yeah.
And then smacked him.
John Cena fan going to a Chris Jericho autograph signing. Ripped the shirt
off. Rips his shirt off. And the guy just walks off and he was trying his hardest not to smirk at this ridiculous acting gig he's just given us. Hardcore title on the line now. Jeff Hardy defending against Rob Van Dam. I was surprised here because Van Dam came out to little or no reaction.
Yeah.
By the end of it, it was a much different story. But the start of this, not much. They start off with the traditional fish out of water spot that you saw a lot in ECW. And JR was saying that he was surprised in this hardcore match in the early on that we haven't seen the obligatory weapons and garbage can shots. It's Jim Ross just shit on traditional hardcore matches. Ross says that next to Hebner, Jeff is the most eligible bachelor in the WWE, which is the second time he has brought up that Jeff Hardy is an eligible bachelor. This had to be some angle they were pushing, that Jeff Hardy was available.
Yeah. Well, what's the deal with Earl Hebner?
I guess he was joking that Earl Hebner is not the most coveted male on the roster. They brawl into the crowd. RVD delivered a moonsault off of the boards of a penalty box in the Gund Arena. We see a twisting heel kick off of the apron by RVD. I've got to say, Rob Van Dam, you know, very, very good performer, but just a terrible heel.
Oh, he wasn't supposed to be.
What are you talking about?
Okay, he was supposed to be. But the way he wrestles, it's impossible for him to be.
He would stop to do the thumbs to himself.
Yeah.
And he would just, at one point, we'll get on to this later, but Hardy pulls out a giant ladder. He climbs to the top. RVD just runs in the ring and then pushes it over. Very poor execution here by Jeff Hardy and what he was trying to accomplish.
And I don't know if you noticed, John, but a number of lines from JR in this match were used in the "Don't Try This at Home" promo.
Such as, "How do you learn how to fall off a 20-foot ladder?" Yeah.
"How's he able to stand is what I want to know."
I can't believe you picked those up because I did as well. We see a Van Daminator that knocks Hardy off of the stage and onto the floor, which was a pretty impressive-looking spot. Hardy is busted open hard way here, which is a rep that RVD quickly gained here in the WWE. Hardy missed a Swanton Bomb, and then RVD hits a 5-star frog splash with the title on top of Hardy's chest
now,
for
how
the
does,
win.
How does that make sense? Putting a piece of rubber with
metal.
Gold on it.
Well, I guess maybe...
And how is that supposed to injure your opponent with you jumping on it?
I think, if anything, it would cushion you because the leather side was on Hardy's chest. It's almost like he was wearing a chest protector.
And it would hurt the attacker, wouldn't it?
And yet, RVD always went for that. Every time he would hit the 5-star frog splash, he'd start selling his ribs. It's like, can't you think of something better that you could hit him with that would not injure yourself so much? And Ross, at the end of it, said, "I don't know how many stars you want to give that at home." I guess a shout-out to Dave Meltzer. I believe this match received 4 stars, everybody. And then after the match, everyone's chanting RVD, RVD. So Van Dam, in an effort to keep his heel heat, put his arms up and took a bow. This fucking guy would never work as a heel.
No.
Then we have Vince McMahon once again. Kurt Angle walks in, starts riling up Kurt Angle and saying how he's an American hero, and Angle says, "Enough with this Americana bullshit. I'm going to go out and kick some ass tonight." So it was serious, Kurt, tonight.
Yeah.
No cowboy hats, no sheriff stars. Kurt Angle. Because all of a sudden we realize he's got a headline of pay-per-view next month.
Mm-hmm. Cussing. The S word.
Yes. Then way we go to the first ever interpromotional bra and panties match between Trish Stratus and Lita against Stacy Keibler and Tori Wilson. And they show the video leading up to this, and it shows Stratus making out with not only Jeff Hardy, but also Matt Hardy, who is Lita's boyfriend, and yet they're forced to team together tonight. So this is going to be a tough one for Lita.
But that didn't come into effect at all, that whole storyline.
No, but they felt a need to refresh our memories here. I had to note that up until this point, this was the biggest video package they had put together for any match. It was a bra and panties match.
But it just felt like this was an example of, they had their course, they had their storylines, and then they decided to incorporate the whole invasion thing into it and basically wipe everybody's slate clean.
Yeah, it was just forgotten. Yeah. Mick Foley returns. He's the guest referee for this match as well.
Because he's a pervert.
Yes. This match, everybody, I'll say not as bad as Earl Hebner and Nick Patrick, but this one, not good. Tori Wilson was incredibly, incredibly green at this point. Not that she got much better in her career, but she attempted a drop kick to Trish that looked horrible. The first clothing removed was Stacy's top that Lita took off. Then I noted here, Stacy, Tori, and Trish are all pretty much at the same level here. Lita became, by default, the veteran worker here. They double-teamed to take Lita's shirt off. Then Lita threw Stacy into a turnbuckle, and somehow Stacy's head missed the top turnbuckle, and they fucked up that spot. The best comment in this whole match was Cole and Ross noting that the inaugural brawl is right around the corner, and then Ross noted, then we'll get serious. Like, this match is just a waste of our time. This is the comedy, everybody.
Oh, it is. And that's all it was. We shouldn't really be taking it too seriously. We're just there to see girls take their shirts off.
And pants. Interesting spot here. Trish rolled up Tori and then took her pants off. And then they double-teamed her for the shirt. So Tori was down to her bra and panties, and that was down to Stacy Keibler. And Trish and Lita double-teamed to strip Stacy. And at this point, I noted a funny pair of signs we saw. We love puppies right next to a National Humane Society sign. And Lita and Trish get the victory here. And as they're walking back, nearly die falling off the entrance to the floor. And they both have their arms around each other. And I guess Lita has forgiven Trish for making out with her boyfriend on national television. So that's nice. Forgiveness is divine.
They actually put bra and panties matches into video games.
Did they?
Yeah. It was a match type that you could actually do.
Well, that's incredibly creepy. We go to the Alliance locker room, and Paul Heyman starts shouting about, tonight we have a chance to prove the difference between being a failure and being a god. And Booker yells, I want to be a god! Stephanie starts yelling, and it is just piercing at this point. Then we go to Vince, who's with Austin and Deborah. We get a serious promo from Austin, who says there's not going to be any hugging tonight. He's here to kick ass, much like Kurt Angle. Amazing that when it came time to do the pay-per-view, suddenly they got serious with Kurt Angle and Steve Austin. What a concept. And that leads us way to the inaugural brawl. Team WWF, consisting of Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, The Undertaker, Kane, and Chris Jericho, taking on Team WCW and ECW. That being Booker T, Diamond Dallas Page, Rhino, and the Dudley Boys, three of the five of which had been working with the WWF up until a few weeks prior. We get a video package for this that I thought was phenomenal. They actually got my interest in this match coming up. They were able to edit it very well, and the go-home Raw for this show, I still remember. It was fucking fantastic. Where Steve Austin was depressed. They didn't know if Steve Austin was going to show up. And by the end of the show, he came back, and it was like a complete babyface turn. And suddenly, he was the old Steve Austin. They did a deal with Freddie Blassie, stepping up from his wheelchair to give a motivational speech right out of Pearl Harbor. This is great.
Wasn't that the episode where Stephanie says to Freddie Blassie that...
you're going to die.
Like the WWF or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, great line there. But a fantastic go-home Raw, and I think, I really believe, everyone says that, you know, this Invasion pay-per-view, it did well because people were still interested in WWF versus WCW. I disagree. I think a lot of people's interest was dead, and it was that turn of Steve Austin for 1 week that grabbed a ton of people's interest. Anyway, just my two cents on that. From their way, we go to a half-hour-long main event.
Yeah.
You did not make yours. You did not get through this whole thing.
No, I fell asleep and then basically...
Highlights of the entrances. To start off, this theoretically biggest main event in WWF, WCW history. Shane McMahon comes out dancing. Then Heyman and Stephanie come out to the ECW theme. And then Vince comes out. And then we get the entrances from each person. including Stephanie dancing to Booker's entrance theme. Huge bop for Angle. Biggest pop of the entire entrances. The whole night was Steve Austin coming out. This was a gigantic, gigantic pop for Steve Austin. And to me, the booking at the end of this. These idiots. The match starts with Taker attacking DDP as he comes out, and everyone starts brawling, which led to Austin's music for the final entrance. And despite all the bad booking, the atmosphere very good for this match. Crowd heat, very, very strong. Angle, as I say every week during this time, his timing, fantastic. Punches look great. This guy was just phenomenal at this period of time. Ross notes the watered-down, neutered version of pro wrestling that is WCW, and the career-shortening, Kool-Aid-drinking ECW. Huge Austin chants throughout this match. 15 minutes into the match, I note that Kane has not been into this match once. He had to have been injured. I don't think he tagged in once during this 29-minute match. We see a diamond cutter onto Kurt Angle. Everyone runs into brawl with each other. Then we see an accidental gore by Rhino to Booker T. Charles Robinson ends up in the ring and takes a last ride from The Undertaker, but this does not cause a disqualification. D-Von is chokeslammed through a table. Then Bubba and Rhino suplex Kane through a table, and that was the end of Kane for tonight. His one spot in this entire match was getting suplexed through a table. Then Jericho puts Rhino through a table. Angle attempts the ankle lock, but the referee is knocked out at this point. Vince throws the title in. Shane intercepts the title to knock Vince out. And then we get a great sequence where Angle is working with the Dudleys and Booker, ends with an angle slam and then an ankle lock to Booker. But then Austin turns on the WWF, attacking Kurt Angle, gives him a stunner, and Booker covers Angle for the WCW and ECW crew to get the win. I hate these types of turns where a guy wrestles for a half hour attacking the guys that he's secretly working with and waits till the end. And I'm sorry, but this heel turn was not working well for business. And I think Austin, they should have kept him as a babyface.
Yeah, it was stupid.
There's a reason this pay-per-view did so well. This guy was by far the most over guy on this entire show. And it was like a pin going into a balloon with that heel turn. And that, to me, this was a chance that you had to salvage things. And I understand you wanted a big name with the invasion. But to me, taking WWE guys and filling them out on the Alliance roster, that doesn't do anything for me. I've seen these feuds. This was leading to Austin and Angle the next month, which we had seen.
Yeah, which has absolutely nothing to do with the invasion.
No, and by the end of this thing at the Survivor Series, I mean, look at the lineup there. You had Kurt Angle, who was on the invasion, on the Alliance. Mm-hmm. Austin was on the Alliance. Shane was on the Alliance.
Wait, Angle joined the Alliance too?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God! But then he ended up turning on the Alliance.
He turned back and forth so many times. I feel the invasion angle was a huge part of what killed Kurt. Not killed Kurt Angle, but severely watered him down. He did so many turns. Go look up Survivor Series 2001.
I'm checking out the team right now. Okay, it was... one second. It was on the WWF side. Undertaker, Kane, Big Show, The Rock, and it looks like Chris Jericho. And on the Alliance, it was Austin, RVD, Booker T, Angle, and Shane McMahon.
That was your Alliance team. So you had RVD, who was the one guy that hadn't been working for the WWE over the past year. Diamond Dallas Page. Yeah. That shows you how much he was not. He did not look that well in this match to begin with.
Shane McMahon.
Shane McMahon in the final.
And you had Kurt Angle on Team WCW.
Awesome, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Great, great angle. Nonetheless, this invasion show, RVD Hardy was a very, very strong match, and I thought the main event well worked. Some of the videos were very good. Yeah. I'm going to give this one a 7 out of 10, guys. 7 out of 10, okay? That might be the highest I've ever given a show.
That's a big one. I actually didn't really enjoy the show that much. It was just... I mean, the matches were okay, but to me, it just screamed mediocrity, this whole show. Nothing too bad about it, nothing too great either, so I give it about 5.5.
So Wade gives it 5.5 out of 10. I'm being more generous with a 7 out of 10. But as we move on from the Invasion recap, we now go to our interview for this week. And joining us this week is Stone Cold Steve Austin to discuss the 2001 heel turn and whether he looks back and looks upon it fondly or regrets it.
Now, going back to 2001, really the peak really was the big WrestleMania, the Astrodome show. Hindsight being 2020, do you regret the heel turn?
Well, you know what? Here's the deal. I mean, and I love that match. It's one of my favorite matches.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite matches
great.
Is with Bret Hart and WrestleMania 13 in Chicago Rosemount. And those two are my favorite matches. When I wrestled The Rock, and Jesus Christ, man, when we went in there and that place, of course, I grew up 100 miles from there. So I was hands down, you know, more popular in that match. Rock was extremely hot. And I love working with the guy. We've always loved working with each other because I bring out the best in him and vice versa. And do I regret it? Man, I tell you what, the feeling was so energetic and the adrenaline was so high. And it was my idea to switch heel because I was feeling like I was starting to plateau. I didn't really have anybody I really wanted to work with at that time. Well, lots of people, but I wanted to do it in a different way because I've always enjoyed being a heel.
Yeah.
But it just turns out when I started getting hot, I turned into a babyface. So I just thought it'd be cool, and Vince always likes to do something real big, you know, or unexpected at a WrestleMania. So I wanted to turn heel. Right then, when I you know what, when I beat The Rock, when I hit him with all those super stiff chair shots,
yeah,
that didn't turn me heel. I mean, it was just a crazy match. Anything went, you know. But it was the fact of, you know, when I shook Mr. McMahon's hand, Vince, and then, you know, we kind of did the deal, and the next night in Fort Worth, beat The Rock up again, and Hunter came down. Looking back, right there in the ring, I should have just looked at Vince and said, hey, Vince, we're calling it off. I'm going to stay just like this. And we could have done that. But we didn't because, you know, we had shook hands, and that was going to be the deal. So it wasn't the best business move in the world. And, you know, when I switched back to babyface, I hate to say that, you know, switching back, but, you know, I was able to get right back to where I was, but that wasn't a good call, no.
So there you go, Steve Austin's thoughts on the big heel turn in 2001, and of course, he ended up back as a babyface by the end of the year. An update I wanted to provide everyone with was last week we were discussing the legalities of using the ECW name and theme music. At this point, the WWE started using the name, feeling that, because Paul Heyman had filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it was under the assumption by the WWE that the ECW name and trademarks had just been abandoned because of bankruptcy, and they were picking them up, and they then realized that they had to go through bankruptcy court, and they had bid $250,000 to buy all of it, and the only secured creditor at the time was Acclaim, who was doing the video game, mm-hmm. and they still wanted to get paid some of the money that they were owed. So at this point, they had to go to bankruptcy court, and it was a process that went over the course of a number of months. And because of all the stalling, and basically we can go into more detail of this, the WWE started phasing out the ECW theme and name after about a month in, and that's why they moved over to the Alliance. Mm. They started using Drowning Pool as their theme, that was the deal. And I don't think WWE officially acquired all of the ECW trademarks till 2004. And then they came out with the DVD, and they brought the brand back. They did the one-night stand shows.
Hmm.
So that was just a little background there.
Oh, very interesting.
Information there. But we have a ton of feedback to get to, Wei. So let's get to that right now. We'll start off with Brian Hillhouse. I just watched the Invasion pay-per-view a few days ago, figuring it would be reviewed next week, and Albert actually seemed pretty over with the crowd, especially when he did his Baldo bomb. And I remember back around that time on The Law, the guys were saying they'd love to see Albert and I think Bull Buchanan as a monster tag team. Well, those guys ended up going to All Japan and teamed up, and that environment, I think, suited them much better.
Mm-hmm. Here, monster tag teams are a dime a dozen. It's really nothing special. Nate Milton, the actual Invasion pay-per-view wasn't half bad if you just look at the matches. RVD versus Hardy was pretty solid, if I remember correctly, and the Divas match was better than the average bra and panties match. And Kidman X-Pac was decent. The angle sucked, but the pay-per-view was watchable.
Yeah, I don't know about that bra and panties match, but I don't know what you're... Well, better than the average bra and panties match. Yeah. I guess that's a compliment. Graham McPhail. The most notable thing I can recall about the Invasion pay-per-view is that in every single match, the WWE guy was cheered by the audience regardless of face-heel status, with the exception of X-Pac. That mm-hmm. would be accurate. Mm.
Paul Willems, I agree, Nate. I actually liked the Invasion pay-per-view, even if the whole angle wasn't what it could have been. I remember watching the pay-per-view and thinking that Jericho would be the one turning heel because he came out wearing his barbed wire tights. I thought they were very ECW-esque, LOL.
Yes, I guess that could have been a subliminal tip-off there. But Jericho, no heel turn. Travers Cummings. Hey, guys, love the latest edition of Review Away. I can't stop laughing every time the X-Factor theme song plays. It's stuck in my head so bad now that I have to put it on my iPod.
Okay.
See, way, Uncle Cracker, slight revival here in 2010.
Thanks.
We should try and get him on the show.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, we should. Review Away's biggest fan. Hey, guys, keep up the great work. I disagree with John to some degree, though, in that the Austin angle comedy segments were hilarious. Turning Austin heel was probably not a good move, though.
Listen, I'm not going to dispute whether these two are funny or not. I think that's besides the point. I think your top guys, you turn them into comedy figures, no one's going to give a shit about them. And if you want to go take a look at some of the booking of Kurt Angle and why he couldn't draw years later, I think that had to do with it. I'm fine with comedy, but not with guys that you want to be. Like, look at this pay-per-view. They dropped all the comedy. There was a reason for that. They realized, listen, these two are portrayed as dorks. No one's going to give a shit about these guys. Another one from Brian Hillhouse. I like how you're reviewing the key events of the Invasion angle. For me, the best thing that happened during the angle was Stephanie McMahon's boob job. She's at least becoming visually appealing.
Yes.
I would disagree. What? I always thought she was very attractive when she first started out. Just very normal looking.
No.
And then she just got ridiculous looking.
Yeah, she became more heelish and sluttier. If you remember when she had that wedding with Triple H, there's that whole segment where Vince McMahon is congratulating Stephanie on getting married, and Vince himself couldn't help but just stare at her massive fake breasts.
That's creepy.
Derek Schluter. Great job on the whole Invasion angle. It would be pretty cool if you guys can review the entire angle over the next couple of weeks. I don't mean every Raw and SmackDown, but the three pay-per-views, minus No Mercy. There is so much to cover, including the return of The Rock, the short-lived debut of Chronic, which we probably both watched live, didn't we? That was in Toronto.
They debuted in Toronto, yeah. That's correct.
Kurt Angle winning the WWF Championship, Kurt Angle defecting to the Alliance, and the eventual demise of the Alliance at Survivor Series 2001.
Look at all these things, like, he covers.
Who cares? Who cares about any of this? Do you actually want us to talk about all that? Kurt Angle winning the WWF Championship, Kurt Angle... nobody cares. Well, we might review it anyway.
Kyle Shaw, I really want to watch this pay-per-view before listening to your review, but my DVD froze right after the Don't Try This ad that those stupid cocksuckers at the WWE make you watch every time you pop in a DVD. On a side note, that's only related in the sense that there are American DVDs that are invading Canada, and we're also forced to watch U.S. Army recruitment ads on all of the latest DVDs. What bullshit.
I have no idea what he means, but I love the fact that when he says their American DVDs are invading Canada, he capitalized the V in invading. just like the pay-per-view.
Oh,
Jay Hunter, I got a dirty I-bomb for you, actually. Is it ironic, or is there any irony in Jeff Hardy's theme music, where he sings modest to the top, modest at the top, modest past the top? Is singing about how modest he is at the top not really arrogant? No.
Denny Zamaya writes, great show as always, guys. In my opinion, even though the Invasion angle was a huge failure, it still provided some good pay-per-views like SummerSlam and No Mercy of that year. Anyway, guys, thanks for the great show. They're hilarious and sometimes are the highlight of my day. Sometimes. John's rants are hilarious, and Way sounds like a very mellow fellow. Yes. Mellow fellow Way. There's some the roster was amazing at this point in time. Mm. It was the creative that I think was the big problem here. I don't think, you know, you're not going to criticize too much of the in-ring stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, if this was the roster itself without the whole Invasion thing, perhaps it could have worked better. Perhaps we would have had better product.
Could have.
If you had no invasion whatsoever. The only thing... this is from John Chinnery. The only thing I remember about the invasion pay-per-view was that RVD versus Jeff Hardy was a really, really good match. How sad that the WWF/E would really fuck up the possibilities of matches like these so quickly. And that's true. There were a lot of... there was a lot of potential for, like, dream matchups. Natural... counter matchups like RVD and Jeff Hardy.
Well, what would they be waiting for? This was the invasion pay per view. I mean, if there was a time to do it,
yeah.
There's no way they were going to hold off to like WrestleMania or something with these. I don't know.
I think he just means that WWF did never pushed for matches like these.
Sure. I mean that's an interesting one, RVD and Jeff Hardy. But really, when you look at the guys that came in. Are there any matches that were dream matches with
Booker T versus The Rock, which they did, I suppose, at SummerSlam? Was that?
Yeah. Diamond Dallas Page. Were there any dream matches with DDP and anybody?
I'm sure there would be.
I mean, there'd be some good matches, but nothing that I think, you know, you're going to go out of your way. And finally, Mark Cardoso. I remember seeing the Invasion pay-per-view at the Silver City in Ancaster. They had trivia before the show, which I won, but they had this makeshift ring in the lobby where if you found a sticker under your seat, you would get your picture taken in the ring with one of the three championship belts they had. The event itself was interesting as my friends and I went. We had never seen ECW or WCW. I remembered my friend in awe seeing a Billy Kidman Shooting Star Press for the first time and being a fan of RVD after the hardcore match with Jeff Hardy. The brain fart ending of the pay-per-view didn't stop me from going on eBay looking for the VCD of the event as I enjoyed the show. What's a VCD?
It's a video CD. It's what they had before DVDs.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Actually,
technology.
I got one more from Simon Hearn. Great show, guys. I'm from Cheltenham, England, and have been listening to your show for the last 6 months, and you have brought back some good and bad memories. Got a couple of my friends into your show, too, and we'd like to have a few jars and reminisce. Just one downside, we think sometimes you sound tired or bored, but with the invasion angle, we don't blame you. Thanks again for the great show.
I don't know. Maybe sometimes we are bored.
And tired.
Maybe. We're only human, guys. Not all this stuff is the most compelling to review. But next week, Way, we're going to take a slight departure from the invasion because, you know, we're all about, you know, focusing on all of the past in pro wrestling. And I don't want to just, you know, focus on just the invasion. We can always go back to it because
yeah.
I found a pay-per-view from June of 2000 booked by Vince Russo with all gimmick matches and built around... something happening that would change the face of WCW forever. That was the main promotion for the 2000 Great American Bash. This was when the company... this was Vince Russo, I think, at his absolute worst. So we'll review that for next week. And then for future editions, maybe we can get back to the invasion. But myself, after a month of the invasion, I'm ready to move on. Much like the WWE was ready to move on at about this point from the entire storyline.
Yeah.
So that is what we will chat about next week. And from there, we encourage everyone to go to our Facebook group, reviewaway.com, R-E-V-I-E-W-A-W-A-I.com. Make people join our Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
Get us to 800, everybody. We're 14 away from that figure.
Mm-hmm. Maybe in 2 weeks.
Maybe 2 weeks. Maybe a month. We'll see.
This show sounds awesome, and you've got Ric Flair versus David Flair, Hogan versus Kidman, and then Jarrett versus Nash. Great. Sean Stasiak versus G.I. Bro. How can you go wrong?
A fantastic show.
Awesome.
Way, as we close out here, what tune are we going out with?
Well, because of the irony of this whole pay-per-view, I feel we should go out to Alanis Morissette's.
Isn't it ironic? A song about... lots of things that are not ironic.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I really do think.
An old man turned 98. He won the lottery and died the next day. It's a black fly in your Chardonnay. It's a death row pardon. 2 minutes too late, and
Isn't it ironic? Don't you think? It's like rain. Do think